We good to start at the back, guys? Yeah? All right. So I got the little green light, so it means we're ready to get going. So first off, I wanted to thank everybody for coming to the session. I really appreciate it. My name is Mike Flasco. I work on the OData team. And in this session, we're not going to do an introduction to OData, but what we're going to do is spend some time looking at kind of the common use cases for OData and how you can use OData to connect kind of any data source over the web to any device. So given it's early and the party was yesterday, I feel like we need to quickly set some ground rules for post-party session etiquette. I have very strict rules here. First one is if you look like this dude and you're struggling to keep your eyes open, I won't feel bad if you need to kind of drop away. I'll try my best to keep you entertained, but don't worry about it. Second, look at your neighbor. If he's looking a little rougher or she's looking a little rougher than you are, you know, give them a little space. If they need to do a little post-party yoga, let them do it, you know. This guy's obviously showing a move, so feel free to do that. I won't feel bad. But let's just jump right in. So last year, we kind of introduced OData for the first time at last year's keynote. And so what I wanted to do quickly was just flash back to that, kind of set context, talk about what we've been doing over the last year since we kind of announced OData, then take a little bit of a look ahead, and then just jump into code. And in the code, we'll look at use cases, and we'll look at three use cases as kind of the most common three that we see people following with OData today. And then we'll end with a case study, which is kind of, I will have been yammering on for a while by that point, and then we'll look at somebody who's actually doing all of this in production in the real world. We can look at how their experiences have gone. All right, so flashback to last year's mix. This very complicated slide was in the keynote of Mix 2010 last year. The idea was that a web API is becoming very important. And traditionally, things were all about what's your browser experience through your website, and that was how a lot of people interacted with your content. But especially these days, the browser is just one of many clients that we're trying to target. And so having a good web API is really kind of the platform for the experiences that you're trying to create. Last year, we kind of gave this the tagline, services powering experiences. And we kind of said, look, there's this shift from website to web API, where web API is kind of forming this platform that you can use to drive all these devices and all these experiences. So that was kind of the premise coming out of last year. Last year, we were starting to talk about devices a little bit at Mix, and we were talking about the shift from website to web API. This year, it's pretty obvious, right? Everybody's got a phone in their pocket. A lot of people have iPads. A lot of people have thin laptops. There's all kinds of visualization technology in browsers and HTML5. So data reach is extremely important. If that doesn't do it for you, we're starting to see a lot of these type of quotes come up. So things like smartphones are now kind of the most shipped device. You look at companies like Netflix and Salesforce. They talk about how the API is just critical to their company's strategy and how they look at it as a kind of a key enabler to keep everybody's eyeballs onto, Salesforce or Netflix or whatever whatever situation it is they're trying to drive. So basically, the gist of it is web APIs become, I think, more important, especially over the last few years. And what we've been working on with OData is trying to make it very easy for people to enable a web API that's rich enough to drive a range of experiences running on a range of devices, running on a range of platforms. So with that quick introduction, I want to just get right into some of the use cases that people have been trying out OData with over the last year. And I'm going to talk about three use cases in the talk. We'll spend most of our time in code so that you can kind of concretely see how to accomplish those use cases on your own if they kind of pattern match to something that's interesting for you. But first, I want to start on kind of a traditional approach. So imagine that you've got a movie catalog, and you're trying to expose that movie catalog to a range of devices. Kind of a pre-OData or pre-OData-like technology approach might be to say, let's go create a web service and put a method called get movies and let people get the movies by rating. Next dude comes along and says, no, dude, I want it rating with paging. Next guy says, paging's cool, but what about ordering? I need it ordered in a certain way. Next client comes and says, rating isn't the thing, I want it by year filmed. Next guy says, nah, genre, I need it by genre. Next guy goes genre and rating. And quickly you end up with kind of this method soup that you've got where you're kind of in the business of trying to predict all the use cases of the clients that are trying to get at your data. hard to scale, a lot of developer work. So what you kind of want to get away from is trying to repeat yourself as a series of methods. Most of the time, you've already got kind of a logical model in your mind of what your data looks like. In this case, you have movies. Movies maybe have actors. Movies have directors. They've won an award. And so you've got this conceptual model. What if we could just take that model and say, I want to make that available to be queried in all kinds of rich ways so that I can drive a range of experiences and I don't have to predict a priori what the clients are trying to do to get at my data. So I'm going to show you a couple of ways to kind of expose your data using OData in a pretty rich way that lets you get away from kind of having to do a bunch of work on the server, but at the same time allows the server to remain in control of the interaction. So it's not just like my database on the web. We have the server, and it's got a number of ways that you can configure and maintain control while still giving a nice kind of flexible interface to your clients. So with that, I want to just jump right into the first use case. And people that are doing this kind of thing are already Netflix, Facebook Insights. They're all following this exact pattern that I'm about to show you. So we've been kind of working with these guys over the past year, and they've been kind of building out their services based on OData in the stacks I'm showing you. So the idea here is that you've got some data, you're trying to expose it to a range of clients, and you're not really sure what all the client experiences are going to be that are going to consume that data, but you want to make sure they have a good experience on your platform. So an example is Netflix. They want to expose all their data. Who knows what are all the ways people are going to consume Netflix data into their app, but the more Netflix out there, the happier they are. So that's kind of the key piece. Similarly with Telerik TeamPulse, that's a project management system. And so you can imagine all the different ways people want to get at project data. From the CEO to the developer to the tester to the project manager, they want to have a very rich interface. So with that, let's dive into a demo. What I've got is a Windows Azure project here. I've got one web role in it. And the first thing I'm going to do is start by creating a data service over a database. And I'm using WCF Data Services, which is Microsoft's Microsoft's library for creating OData services. In this case, we're creating a server for OData. So I'm going to say, actually, I want to go data. And I'm going to say OData Validation Suite. And bear with me for a second. We're going to go through a wizard. We're using the Entity Framework, which is our object relational mapper, which is basically going to create for me a set of objects that represent the data in my particular database. So I'm saying, go to get all those tables and create me a set of objects that map to those tables. All right. So now we have kind of a pictorial view of the data. And you can see there's two main things, validation jobs and test results. The service we're going to build is a validation service. That service is going to take a URI from the user, and it's going to be a URI to an OData service, and we're going to run a bunch of tests against that URI and see if the OData service is conformant to the OData spec. So you can imagine this service being used in somebody's test backend or during development to test out if their OData service is a valid OData service and thus interops as widely as possible. So a bit of a non-traditional example, given that we're going over a database, but we're also going to have some long-running processes involved and whatnot. The key thing to know here is the URI property. When somebody adds a new validation job into the system, they tell us the URI of the service to be validated. What's going to happen here is somebody's going to insert a new validation job. We're going to get it. We're going to initialize that job, save it to the database, and then we're going to put a job onto a work queue. We're going to have a background thread reading from that work queue. It's going to actually run all the tests, so we're going to have a long-running process going in the background running all the tests. It's going to dump all the test results into the test results table in our database, so that somebody can come up to our service, post a new job, come back, be told your job is posted, we're running it, hang on a second, and then later on they can go retrieve the test results. All right, so let's get started. So let's add to this guy a data service. So I'm going to use WCF Data Services here, and I'm going to call this OData Validator, say add. Let's clean things up a little bit. All right, so first task, if anybody isn't familiar with data services, first task is wire up your data service to your Entity Framework model. if you're creating a data service over a database like I am, this is a piece of cake. You go OData Validation Suite Entities. This is the class that represents this model as a whole. It was generated for me in that wizard. Next thing, I can start making declarative statements about that model. So I can say config.setEntitySet access rule. And I can say anytime somebody tries to access validation jobs, I'm going to allow them only to read one job at a time, so not the entire set. And we're going to say entitySetWrites.WriteAppend. So you can read one at a time. You can also insert one. Can't do anything else with that collection. With the test results collection, we're going to say that, yeah, you can read those, you can query them, you can page them, you can get them however you want to get them. Similarly, with a collection that I didn't show you yet called payload lines, this is just the payload we're actually going to validate after we've downloaded it from the target service. You can read those and query them however you want. Another nifty feature that OData has is that you can make a request to an OData service and specify that you want a graph of data to come back. So you can say, give me back a validation job and its associated test results and its associated payload lines. So what I want to do is I want to maintain control on the server about how big of a graph I'm willing to return. So in this case, I'm going to say max expand count, the number of related things that I can include in my graph is 2 wide, and the max expand depth is 2 deep. So I can kind of have a graph too wide, too deep. So I'm kind of making declarative statements about how I want my service to act and what I'm letting it do. Finally, I can say, what happens if some of these data sets become really big, like the tables of data become really large? OData's got some features built in that allow you to manage really big data sets. So for example, if the set of test results I run is quite large, I don't want to allow everybody to query this big set, I want to kind of rate limit them a little bit or page them a little bit. So I'm going to say whenever anyone asks for test results, give them 400 at a time and tell them how to continue on from there. So it allows the server and the client to make partial progress, but allows the server to stay in control. All right, so we got the basics of a service going. I could F5 this and things would be running and we'd be just fine. But I'm going to take the liberty of removing the .svc extension at the end because I know a lot of people like to have pretty URIs and don't like that little SVC gunk. So I'm in the global ASAX of my project. I'm going to uncomment some stuff here. And this little line is just using ASP.NET web routing. It's saying the service available at this class, make it available at this URI. So we can go to /odatavalidator, and that's going to be the URI of our service. No more .svc or any extra gunk. So nice and pretty URIs. And if we take a look at this guy in the browser now really quickly, we have an error. Fabulous. Ah, thank you. That would have been tricky for me to find. Thank you. Anybody who wants to continue to help me in that way, please do. But if you're wrong, I don't want to hear it. So now I can say things like test results. I'm going to, if you can't see this, let me just zoom in. I'm going to say test results, filter, OData level equals to core. So I'm just saying give me all the test results here that map to the kind of core test results. And so I've just asked a query against the service, and I'm getting back all the test results. These are test results that I put into the database before the session so that we'd have something to look at this point. So just a point that, hey, we've got a working OData system at this point. Next step that I want to do is start to initialize things so we can actually submit jobs and execute them. So I'm going to go and grab a little bit of code so that we don't have to watch me type anymore. Just hear me out for a second while I do some resolving magic here. Great. All right, so I just pasted a static constructor. What's happening here is when the service loads, we're starting up a background thread, background task on the thread pool. This task is just going to be watching an in-memory work queue, and it's going to watch for items on the queue. As soon as there's an item, it's going to dequeue it, and it's going to run the validation tests. I'm not going to show you the background thread code because it's completely uninteresting. It just sits there and watches a queue, pulls off from the queue, and then runs the tests using a little test library we have. This is just some initialization gunk I need for my little test control I wrote for this library. So with that initialized, what I want to do next is actually capture when somebody tries to insert a new validation job so we can on-queue things and get the work going. So for that, let me grab a little bit more code. And we'll go through it, this one in more detail. All right, we should be able to build now, great. So what I've done is I've pasted in what's called a change interceptor. This method is going to fire every time somebody tries to insert into the validation jobs collection. So no matter how they land on validation jobs, they go directly, they go to a test result, go back to the associated job, this method will fire. It's going to give me an in-memory representation of the job that's trying to be inserted into the system. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to initialize this job so it's got all the values I want it to have. So obviously it's not complete. Give it an ID. Then I'm going to instantiate a little rule engine that we have. This has nothing to do with OData. This is just for the demo. I created a little rule engine that's actually going to execute tests against the job that was against the endpoint that was submitted. And once I initialize that, I'm going to ask the rule engine, for the job that was submitted, how many tests are you going to run? That way I can return to the client and say, you submitted this job, I'm going to run this many tests against it. Last, I'm going to associate the payload lines with the validation job. So at this point, my little test control has downloaded the thing to be validated, and it's got the kind of the payload that I'm going to try and validate. And I'm just associating that payload with the payload line, so a little helper class. Last one I'm going to drill right into, which is initialized job state. All it does is it sets up a little wrapper class that hangs on to my little test control that I made for this demo, as well as the job ID. And this job state class is the thing that we're going to put onto the work queue for the background thread to pick up and then actually execute the tests on the background thread. So now what we've done is, let me roll this up. We've kind of initialized the job when it came into the system. And the last step that we need to do is actually put that job onto our work queue. But what I want to do is I only want to put it on the queue after I'm sure that the validation job has come in, we've stored that validation job in the database, and we've got everything ready to go to run tests. So I'd like to have a spot I can run code after all this stuff is already run. And I want to do my on queue onto the work queue as the very last thing. So here I'm going to say public OData validator, just to have a constructor. And here I'm going to use the processing pipeline of data services, and I'm going to plug into that processing pipeline. So I'm going to say this.processingPipeline.processedChangeSet, which basically means we've processed the entire change. And this method is going to get run. Logically, this method runs after all of this stuff, so I'm going to put it at the bottom. And the thing I have to do here is I have to go validationJobQueue.onQueueJob, and I'm going to add that job state that we initialized in our change interceptor just a second ago. This validation job queue is just a static in-memory queue. There's nothing fancy about it at all. It's about 10 lines. But if you wanted to run this at scale, you could imagine this being a Windows Azure queue and having a Windows Azure worker role reading this queue and executing the tests in a worker role in Windows Azure. So I simplified it just for the demo so we could get it all going. So this would basically complete the scenario that we talked about, but I'm going to kind of add a few more bells and whistles to be aware of. So I'm going to go back into the processing pipeline again, and I'm going to say when we're processing a request, so this is something that happens at the very beginning of execution of the pipeline. So I'm going to take this, and I'm going to put it right before the change interceptor. Logically, it runs here. Normally, you'd factor this kind of stuff out, but I'm putting it all in one file so we can see it all in one go. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a little helper I wrote that says enable caching. And I'm going to say for payload lines, got it right this time, I think. And I'm going to say e.operationContext.absoluteURI. And I'll do that so we can see it all. Basically, what I'm doing here is I'm saying if a request comes into the system for the payload lines collection, enable caching. Because once I've downloaded those payload lines, they don't change. So I want it, anytime somebody comes to get them again, I want it to be really fast. I just want to serve it out of the cache. I don't want to have to go back to the database to get the payload lines, et cetera. And I'm going to show you what this looks like, because it's actually really simple. There's no magic here. I just didn't want to type it all in front of you. I'm just saying if the last segment is payload lines, go ahead and enable caching. My model's pretty easy, so this is a quick check, but usually you'll do something a little more complicated. And this piece of code enables caching. It basically says, allow the client browser to cache it, allow us to cache it in the output cache of the ASP.NET output cache. This code has been there since like ASP.NET 2. So it's just, you know, direct integration with the ASP.NET caching infrastructure. So now we've kind of initialized everything. We've made it fast with caching. The last thing I want to do is I want this class to be, this service to be invocable from AJAX applications. A lot of times AJAX applications can't make cross-domain calls for various reasons. But a common technique to enable that is to use something called JSON with padding, or JSONP. I'm not going to talk about exactly how JSONP works, but that's the technique that jQuery and all these other libraries use. If you want to make this service support JSON with padding, we've got a little extension on CodePlex that I'm going to include in my service. And it just defines an attribute. So life is pretty easy to add cross-domain support for JSON. You just go JSONP support, and now the service does JSONP, which is pretty cool. Let me build this guy, and at this point, we should have a full-on working service. I'm going to go back to my change interceptor, set a breakpoint so I can prove that this is actually working. Normally, at this point, we would insert a new validation job, query for all the test results, and instead of doing that at the protocol level, I wrote a little HTML page that's got some AJAX in it. It's going to let us just enter in a URI, click validate. That'll post the new job, and then it'll pull the test results collection to get all the test results. So we're going to just use that little UI instead of going directly from the protocol level. So I'm just deploying. It takes a minute because I'm running everything in the Azure local fabric. So it's kind of packaging it all up just like it would if I was deploying to Windows Azure. And it should launch in the browser here in a second. So here's my little AJAX page that I wrote. And now we want to validate a service. So let's do the service for this conference, live.visitmix.com. It would be pretty embarrassing if it fails, but hopefully it'll pass everything. And so now I'm going to click validate. It's going to post to my set. There's my breakpoint being hit. I'm going to initialize that job. I'm going to on-queue the job. And if I did everything right, I was pretty quick. It ran all the tests. It said, congratulations, this is valid. Here's all the stuff we ran. And here's the payload we downloaded and ran those results against. And so in the background, what happened is we got that post. We initialized it, put something on a work queue. The background thread picked it up, was running those tests in the background. And we just pulled for those tests from the AJAX page. So a bit of a non-traditional open data example, but I wanted to show you something a little bit different than just a database expose. So with that, I'm going to jump out of the browser really quickly, close. I'm going to run this guy one more time. I'm just priming the pump for some future demoing. And I'm going to jump out and go back to our slides here. Oh, great. So we looked at what it takes to expose some data in kind of a rich way using OData. And the next thing that a lot of people want to do is our next use case, and a lot of the another reason why people often use OData is they expose their data for the reason that they want to be able to reach a lot of the common devices today. So iOS, Android, Sean, you can come up. Windows Phone, and so their goal is by putting up that OData feed to try and reach all of those devices, regardless of what platform it is. So Sean is going to come up from our team. He's our development manager on the team. And he's going to show us how to consume that service that I just wrote from iOS using the iOS client library for OData.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Like Mike said, my name is Sean Pather, and I'm the development manager for the OData and Energy Framework teams at Microsoft. And I'm here to show you what it takes to consume OData feeds on the iOS platform. So am I hitting the wrong button here?
There we go.
All right, so what I have here is a Mac, and I have the Xcode development environment installed, the iPhone simulator, all the rest of the iOS SDK stuff.
And I've also gone and downloaded the OData client for Objective-C. So this is an open source library. You can go get it today on CodePlex. The URL there is odataobjc.codeplex.com. And this allows you to build apps for iOS that consume OData feeds. So I've gone and previously installed this on my computer, so I've got it ready to go. And I have here just a basic skeleton iPhone project. It doesn't have much in it, just the boilerplate stuff. I need to get the app going. And I'll show you it runs. It displays a table with no data in it. So what we'll do is take this app and add the code using our Objective-C client library to consume the same validator service that Mike just built and have it display some test results in the iPhone. So I'll show you the URL that I'm going to hit. And so this is the same service, essentially, that Mike had before. And it's got a feed. It's got some entries in it. And in those entries are some test results. And this is just some results from a job that I submitted last night. So we're going to go ahead and grab the URL of this service. And we'll use that to start getting the app going. So I'm going to just copy and paste that URL. And we'll go to our command line here. And the first thing I need to do to get going with the Objective-C library for OData is run a tool called OdataGen. And so this is a tool that, given a URI to a service, is going to go off and figure out what the shape of that service is, and will generate for me some Objective-C classes that correspond to the shape of that service. So if I look here, there were some files generated for me, OData Validation Suite Entities.h and .m. So I'll switch back over to Xcode and add those two files to my project. All right, now we're going to do some Objective-C coding, which if you haven't seen before, looks a little weird, but bear with me. So we're going to add those two files. And you can see if I hit one of these files real quick, there's basically interfaces in here for each thing in the model. Like, for example, test results is there, and there's strongly typed properties for each of the things in it. So it reflects the same model that Mike built a few moments ago. Great. So we have those files in our project. Let's go over to our app delegate, which is sort of the application start point for the application. And what we'll do is go ahead and create an OData context, which is our starting point for working with the library. So we'll say OData Validation Suite Entities, which is our context class. We'll declare that. And then we'll allocate one of them. And we'll initialize it with the URI of the service. And I can just paste the one that I just grabbed before. We don't need any credentials to hit the service, so we're good to go there. And then we'll create a data service query to go query stuff. And that just reminds me I forgot to import the header files here. So we're back in a language here where you kind of need to think about header files and so on. But we'll just do that real quick. So, oops, like that. So we've got our header files. We've got the data service query. And now we'll do a similar thing here. We'll take our data service query, we'll allocate one, and we'll initialize it with the URI of the thing we want to query. And just going back real quick to the browser, the thing we want to query is this validation jobs with a particular GUID, so that'll be one job, and then find the associated test results. So I'll copy that. Paste that here. Put that in the wrong place. Sorry. There we go. Put that here. And set the object context for this class to be the context I just created. Great. So now we can go get a query operation response. And we'll get one of those by sending this query object, the execute method, and we'll set the test result items here to be the results that come back from that class. And once we're done there, we're pretty much almost done. So we'll go to the response, and we'll say get result, and we should be good to go. So let me just build here to make sure I didn't screw anything up. Great, so we build. One last piece of code that we need to do is in the table view, where we display the results, we have to write a few lines of code that just actually controls the rendering of the individual table cell. So I'm going to import that same header file. And in the cell for row at index path, which is the method that the CocoaTouch framework calls to get a cell for the table. We're going to say OData validation suite model test result. We're going to get one of those, and we'll get it from this class's items object at index and index path row. So all of this is just standard CocoaTouch stuff. And once I have that test result, I can go to my table cell, and we'll grab the text label. We'll set the text of that to be the test results description. And we'll do one more. We'll just set the cell's detail to be the text results classification, which is really the did it succeed or fail, like that. And we should be good to go. So if I did everything correctly, we can build, and we can run. And what you should see here is the iPhone app spin up and a table. And there you can see basically the entries that came from my OData feed for this validation job. So that, in a few minutes, is how you get an iPhone app going to consume an OData feed. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah. All right, let's jump back over the other laptop, hopefully. Great. And so we showed it in iOS, and so of course we'll be showing it in Windows Phone. So what we're going to do is do a similar thing, and we're going to create a similar application on Windows Phone 7. And it's going to be an app that looks pretty much like this. You can see it's kind of a mock-up right in front of us. It's going to describe everything that happened. There's been a lot of talks already at this conference about how to build a basic Windows Phone app, and there's a bunch of recordings available. So I'm not going to do the app from scratch like Sham just did, but instead I've got a full MVVM OData app already created here. I'll make it available with my session content if you want to go check it out. We also have good walkthroughs available online to recreate exactly what I have. But instead what I want to do is just touch on two quick things. One is what's new in Mango for OData, and two, just a couple of the gotchas to know about when working on the phone, because the basic story with Mango is that we've updated the OData client library for Windows Phone such that it's exactly the same as what you're used to on Silverlight. So if you've done it on Silverlight, you can do it on the phone. We've added back link support, so you can write all your queries using link again. We'll translate those to OData queries under the covers, and you can just write everything in link, and we'll do all the protocol gunk under the covers. Second is, remember how Sham just did that code generation step from the command line? We've added back add service reference support to allow you to do that same type of code generation from directly inside Visual Studio on the phone. So if you're used to that in Silverlight, we've added that back to the phone tools. So when you get the Mango phone tools, everything you did in Silverlight just works now in the phone. So the last thing to know about, the one thing that's different on the phone from what you might be used to on Silverlight or the desktop with OData, or what you might see in some of our past samples, is when you're on the phone, you want to take care of a step called tombstoning. Tombstoning is, if you're unfamiliar with Windows Phone, it's basically the idea of if you're looking at an OData app, or any app for that matter, on the phone, and you switch away from that app to some other app, when you switch away, your application is tombstoned. Basically, that means you need to take the state of your application, save it off, so that if somebody switches back to the app, you can rehydrate the state of your app exactly how it was when you switched away. So I'm going to show you a quick way to handle tombstoning, because that's something new that we might not be used to if we're used to Silverlight or desktop development. So what I've got here, as I said, is kind of a pre-done MVVM OData app. This is my main view model. It knows how to submit a job, query for test results, etc. And what I'm going to do is teach the view model to tombstone itself. Because if you're in the MVVM pattern, the view model is the thing that binds the UI to kind of the code that knows how to interact with the service. And so the view model really is the thing that knows the state of the entire app. So I'm going to define an interface here called handle lifecycle events. It has tombstone and activate, activate just being the inverse of tombstone. And I'll explain the other property in a second. And so I'm going to have my view model support my iApplication handler thingamajig here. And then I've got an implementation of that interface already put in. And I've got tombstone implemented. And in tombstoning, the thing to do is say, do I have any state that's worth saving off? In this case, have I queried any test results? If I do, then I want to save off that state. And the way you do it is we've added this data service state class. So if you don't look at anything else, just look at the highlighted line. That's the one to know. You can use that class. It makes it really easy to save off all the state that you've used in your OData app. And that converts all of our state to a string. I'm going to then go to the phone application service and say, here's my state. If you need to purge it to disk, go ahead and purge it to disk. I also put this one other little token in there, and it's just a count of all the things that I've queried before from the service. I'll explain why I did that in a second. And I've got an activate method here. This is just the inverse of Tombstone. You can see it deserializes using that same object after I pull it out of the phone application state bag. And I get back the test results. And then I have an init method in my view model that takes back all of this state and knows how to rehydrate the view model based on the state that's coming back. Last thing is in Mango, there's this fast application switching that's supported, which basically means if you're in the app, you switch away from the app and you switch back, it may not have actually purged your application state from memory. It may still be there. And so if the state is still there, you don't want to do the work of rehydrating the view model. And so that's called a fast app switch. And so I want to be able to detect that. And so I'm just doing a really cheap detection to say, if what was in memory at the time of tombstoning is still there, then I just fast app switch, no need to do tombstoning. So I'm going to go now and hook up this tombstoning code to the events of the phone. And for that, I'm going to go to the application class, which is a class that's kind of for the entire application. And I've defined a little property called tombstonable view model. And I've wired up two event handlers. So this one will fire anytime the app is being switched away from. And so here I can just say tombstonable view model.tombstone. And that'll wire up the event to the tombstone logic for whatever the active view model is. And finally, when I get rehydrated or reactivated, I can say if not tombstonable view model. So if I'm not fast app switching, I need to actually rehydrate my state. So I can say tombstonable view model.activate. So quick thing to be aware of when working on the phone. This is the one gotcha to know, so that when you go and try to do this afterwards, this is the one thing to kind of catch. We've noticed that it's not immediately obvious you need to handle this kind of stuff. So we tried to provide a pattern to make it easy when you're using OData on the phone to handle this. So let's run this app really quickly. Come on. All right, here we go. So let's validate our live.visitmix.com OData again. Click validate. It's going to go talk to that same service we created earlier in the demo. There's my test results. They all passed. I click one test result. There's more information about it. And now if I switch away from the app, my tombstoning stuff should get called. So I'll switch away. Tombstoning stuff is called. Great. Let's keep going. I saved off my state. Now if I want to go back, I need to be able to rehydrate if needed. So let's click back and see what happens. Click back. We detect if we're fast app switching. In this case, we are. No need to rehydrate. Keep running. And we're back to the app in the state it was. So that's the one gotcha to know. Everything else is just standard Windows Phone, MVVM, OData. It turns out the OData library, we spent a good amount of time trying to make it so that it was really easy to integrate in with the kind of MVVM pattern that a lot of people use on the phone. All right, so let's jump out of here. Yes. Great. And go back to our slides. All right. So we looked at now how to expose our data, how to consume it from a couple different devices. One thing I wanted to call out was I used the .NET framework and the WCF data services stack to create my server side. There's other libraries available if you want to create your server side using Java, for example. There's a project called OData4J available off of odata.org. So you could do the same type of thing in Java if you wanted. So on the phone, oftentimes you're concerned about how much bandwidth am I using, what's the latency. There's a number of constructs built directly into OData to make it so that the device can ask only for the data that it needs. So we have things like paging and filtering and projections so that you can get down and ask for only the data you need to really shrink the payload. And in the next session, we'll talk about how we're taking that even farther to make these payloads really, really tight. And then to limit round trips, we have this ability to ask for graphs of data in one round trip through this $expand primitive. And so using $expand, you can really limit the number of round trips you need to make between phone and service to get all the data you need to hydrate your view model. All right. So with that, I'm going to jump to our last scenario. But before I do that, I want to mention the validation tool that we've been using. We've actually created a production version of it. It's currently available from validator.odata.org. And you can basically use it to validate all of your OData implementations. It only supports a subset of tests today, but we'll continue to grow it over time. So last scenario we want to support with OData is breaking down application silos. Basically, what this means is there's a lot of apps out there that you put a lot of data into or generates a lot of data on your behalf. But oftentimes, it's hard to get data out of that app or use that data in different ways, like consume it from a device, consume it from Excel, consume it from a visualization tool. And so there's a lot of companies that are integrating in OData directly into their app, whether it's a CRM system or a project management system or CMS systems. So what I want to do is just show you an example of that using Webnodes. Webnodes is a CMS system created by a Norwegian company just named Webnodes, and they create a semantic CMS. And what that means for them is that they have a CMS that really tries to maintain the structure of all the data you've given it. That way, it's got the structure and the relationships of the data. It can project out your data as an HTML page, as an OData feed, as any other format. And they've integrated OData natively into their CMS so that they can you can easily get at all of your Webnodes data from a device, from an AJAX page, whatever. So I'm going to show you that the Webnodes project in action. We've done similar things with SharePoint as well. So there we go. I'm trying to get back to my thingy here. And so let me fire up a couple of demos back here. So this first site is actually being driven by Webnodes. It's Explore Norway. And it's just a demo version of a fuller site that they run in production. And I'm going to just go to the OData, OData endpoint behind this. And every piece of data in that CMS is exposed to me for consumption programmatically from the phone or whatever it might be. So I can say, give me the first two articles. So I just issued a query, give me the two articles. And they're going to give me the article information. And they're even giving me URIs to paragraphs of the particular article. So I can drill all the way into any piece of content from Webnodes programmatically here. Similarly, I can now go to a JavaScript page that's consuming that OData feed. And so what they've done is they've consumed all the images from that CMS, from that website, through JavaScript. And they've made a little nice demo page. So I can also filter. I can say, give me only the photos from Norway. Click on one of these. And you can see down below here, at the bottom, right here, this is actually the URI being generated by this demo. And so all of this is just being consumed by the OData feed. And we've got one more example with Webnodes. This is a children's charity in Norway called Red Barna. They run Webnodes to kind of manage their charity, keep people up to date with what's going on, take donations, etc. And because all this data is exposed using OData, they're able to consume it from not just developer tools, but all the other tools that are available, such as Excel and Microsoft Power Pivot. So using Excel and Power Pivot, they were able to consume all of this data into Excel by just taking that OData URL of the web page and pasting it into Excel and say, suck all the data into Excel so that we can analyze the data, see how we're going. So this particular charity is able to see how they're doing with donations. They're able to make that data available to people. And they're really able to manage their organization and see how things are going and get kind of rich visualizations about the state of their site. And all of this data is just live, hooked up to the OData feed for that Red Barna site. So you can do some pretty interesting things once you're able to kind of expose it in a kind of an open way like this. So that's a couple quick examples by Webnodes. You can go to webnodes.com. They have a page on their OData integration there, and they talk about all the scenarios they've enabled using OData with Webnodes. So I encourage you to check that out. Next one, let's jump out of here and go back to PowerPoint. All right, so that was kind of the breaking down app silos approach. And we're seeing this with more and more applications all the time, where you're getting these apps that have stored a ton of data, whether it's CMS systems or CRM systems, whatever they are, that are really just integrating OData natively, so that as you're working with that application, the API is hydrated with all the data that you've been adding or manipulating. All right. So we looked at three scenarios: how to expose your data in a pretty rich way, how to consume it from any device, and then how to kind of integrate OData with applications so that you can expose data not only yourself by creating your own web services and whatnot, but by using direct integration with various applications. So hopefully that gave you a bit of a flavor for what we're trying to get towards when we say services powering experiences. The idea is that you have one rich, flexible web API that you're able to kind of put your business logic into. You model your domain, whether it's movies or enterprise data or whatever it might be, and then you're able to drive a range of experiences from Excel with BI to desktop apps in Silverlight all the way through to iOS device applications and Windows Phone applications. So that's kind of the services powering experiences pitch, and that's kind of what we spend a lot of time trying to make sure that OData supports and supports really well. And so I've shown you what you can do with OData today. All of this stuff you can just go do. I didn't use any experimental bits or anything like that. This is what we've been working on over the past year. There's a session in this room afterwards, I think at 10:30, given by Pablo, the architect on the team, and he's going to talk about where's OData headed? What are we hearing from customers that are using it, and how are we kicking it up a notch to make these experiences even better? And with that, I want to end with a real-world example. So I've been talking for a while and creating a bunch of demo code. We saw one real-world example, but there's another company called Eastbank Technologies. They're a global company. They do a lot in the public sector space and in other areas as well. They've been using OData, and they've been using it in a lot of their production systems. One particular system we're going to highlight here is their public transit data community. Basically, what they've done is they've created a pretty innovative take on transit information. They're able to suck in transit information from all kinds of sources, make it available, put it into SQL Azure, make it available as an OData feed, and drive a pretty rich range of experiences. And so before I talk about it any much more, let me just get this thing going here, and you'll see what I mean. So what we're looking at is, this is Eastbank stuff, and in the background you've got a tablet-like or a touch experience over top of this transit information. So you could be on your iPad figuring out, you know, what's the best route for me to get here to here in DC in the best way possible. On top of that, you got a Windows Phone 7 application doing similar things, but obviously customized to the form factor and experience that's best in WP7. And on top of that, you've got a iOS application doing something similar, but native to the iOS device. So you can see how they've been able to leverage OData to create one common service to drive a bunch of different experiences where those experiences feel very native and natural inside of the kind of the target environment, whether it's a big touch device or a smaller device like a phone. So I love watching this video. Like, it's far cooler than anything we ever create, and so we've been playing it for a while and just looking at it, because they have a pretty slick experience for transit information. They're actually here with us at the conference and in the room. So afterwards, we'll be available for questions. They'll be around as well. So if you have any questions for them about, you know, what their experience was like with OData, what services they offer, I'm sure they'd be happy to chat. Or if you want to email me, I'd be happy to get you guys in touch. So there's you can see it's creating the routes across everything. It's pretty cool. And we've got a few minutes left. And so I wanted to end by giving you a few resources. I didn't start from the OData introduction, so if you're completely new to OData, there's a lot of resources that you can use to learn. OData.org is the site you can go to that is just about the protocol, just about OData. So if you want to get started with OData, learn about what it's up, you know, what's going on, what's currently available, what we're thinking about in the next round, what the community's thinking about, go to OData.org. If you want to get involved, if this was interesting to you, but you're like, you know, what's going on with OData? How do I give feedback? How do I alter the direction it goes? Go to OData.org, go to the mailing list there. And basically, the way OData gets designed is it's just designed in a kind of an open community. What happens is, as we get feedback from folks about, we want to try and solve the services powering experiences challenge, but we need OData to do this, or we wish it would have done that. We have these open conversations on the mailing list where people from all companies say, I wish it looked like this or worked this way, and we have open design discussions. We share all of our design thinking on the mailing list before our team starts implementing anything or before we start changing the spec. So if you don't believe me, just go check out the mailing list. There's an archive of all our discussions. You can see actually most of the stuff that I've shown here previously discussed on that mailing list. So it's a great way to get involved. The OData spec is completely open. What I mean by that is we release it under the open specification promise, which means that anybody can pick it up, implement it, IP-free. Our goal with OData is to make it such that it's completely open spec. We can get an ecosystem going of clients and servers so that anybody who decides to expose their data with OData automatically can take advantage of all the good work we've all done on the client side to consume and vice versa. And so if you want to get involved, odata.org is the place to go. Second, validator.odata.org. As I said earlier, this is the real version of the demo I created earlier. So we actually created a real version. You can hit that today. You can start validating OData URIs. And it's in the alpha stage right now, so it runs just a few tests. I think there's only a maximum of like 30 or 40 tests that it'll run. But we're trying that each week or so, we'll be adding more and more tests. So you'll have a very rich tool over time that you can use to validate your endpoints that you create. And then finally, msdn.com/odata. If you want information about Microsoft's implementation of OData, that's the place to go. We've refreshed it recently with a bunch of new content. But if you want information that's about any of the other libraries, odata.org has that available for you as well. Last thing, there's a bunch more OData content coming today. As I mentioned, after this is kind of the roadmap or futures for OData that we've been discussing on the mailing list. Pablo's doing that, and there's a few more sessions after that as well. With that, I want to thank you very much for your time. I appreciate coming to the 9 a.m. session. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them here or email me. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.